We all have our golden hour, our time to de-stress and reflect. To reach new levels of calm and contentment, check out Plus CBD's Reserve Collection. It's crafted using the highest quality full-spectrum hemp oil for bigger, broader effects to help you experience deeper relaxation and a brighter mood. As you know, I'm a big proponent of CBD to tonify the endocannabinoid system, which regulates many of our most critical bodily functions, such as learning and memory, emotional processing, sleep, temperature and pain control, and inflammatory and immune responses. CBD is a real breakthrough in herbal products. The CBD brand that I take is Plus CBD from CV Sciences. Their Reserve Collection is a specially curated blend of cannabinoids, rich and bold, or when intense support is needed. Enjoy a deeper CBD experience with Plus CBD's Reserve Collection of oils and gummies. To learn more or to order, visit pluscbdoil.com/Hoffman and use coupon code Hoffman30 for 30% off. That's pluscbdoil.com/Hoffman for Plus CBD's Reserve Collection. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. With me today, Layla Mutin, who's our nutritionist. Layla, how are you doing?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman.
In the news, an interesting article in the Journal of the American, Nutrition Journal, the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, which is a commentary on a very interesting phenomenon, which is, you know, Americans are getting heavier and heavier. The statistics show that more and more people, a higher percentage of people are overweight. I think it's 42% or 48%, something. Depends on the criteria. And then a higher percentage of people are overtly obese, which is an even higher amount of excess weight.
Yes.
And it's progressive. It's been happening in all age groups, in all ethnicities, especially over, the years, the past 50 years, you know, since 1960 or so, which I guess is 60 years. And it correlates with the introduction of processed foods and our change in lifestyle. And so the assumption pretty much, I think you'll agree, Layla, is that most people say that the reason is we're eating more and exercising less. However, in this article in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, they cite statistics that suggest that people are maybe eating less calories and they're maybe exercising just a tad more on average, you know, and it depends. You know, obviously, there's a great deal of variation in population. So the article says, well, what's going on here? Because, you know, it's not a thermodynamic equation.
Yes.
And what they're saying
is, it's not all about the calories in, calories out.
Exactly.
And
what they're saying is that the quality of food has changed. And they focused on the microbiome. And what they said, and this is a fantastic statistic, it's hard to estimate, but a certain percentage of your caloric expenditure occurs in your gut. And it ranges, research suggests that it ranges from 7 to 22% of your caloric expenditure is in your gut, and it depends on a healthy microbiome. So actually, you know, I just did a 20-mile bike ride, and the readout on my computer says that I expended like 650 calories or something like that. But I could have just stayed home, and you know, maybe my microbiome would have burned off more calories. So by disrupting our microbiome, and they didn't even mention this, you know, they mentioned the foods, the food quality, but they don't even mention the fact that so many more people are taking antibiotics. There's ingredients
which
in food
causes overweight. That's how they fatten up.
Yep.
Those confined factory farmed animals.
Exactly.
By feeding them antibiotics.
Yes.
60% of the use of antibiotics in America is factory farmed animals.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely.
So, yes. More and more people taking antibiotics for, you know, even a little something that they shouldn't even be taking an antibiotic for.
Right.
Yeah. It causes weight gain.
Right. So, and then, you know, all the other factors that may negatively impact the microbiome, so the emulsifiers, the food additives. So one thing that they didn't mention in this article, and I'm kind of surprised, is the role of obesogens, environmental chemicals that we either take in with food, water, or in even in the air we breathe. And, you know, we know that that's an important factor. So it was an interesting deep dive on what seems like a paradoxical situation. We're not necessarily eating more, but the quality of the food has declined.
Yes.
And the environment has deteriorated. And we take too many medications. I mean, also...
We take too many medications. And I also wonder, Dr. Hopkin, with the movement towards a more plant-based diet, mm-hmm. aka vegan diet, people are eating more carbohydrates.
Yes.
I'm wondering if that study takes into effect the impact of the hormones, the insulin.
Right.
Maybe the lack of glucagon, because when we have that many carbohydrates in our diet, insulin is on stage all day long. Yeah.
So, Layla, should we write a letter to the editor of the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition
yes.
and point some of these things out? And
yes.
And, you know, the other thing that I would point out is that so many more people since 1960 are on antidepressants. Their use is virtually ubiquitous, and even in children. So I think we're seeing more and more of that. And that clearly has, I mean, we have trouble sometimes with our patients who are on antidepressants with appetite. It's very hard for them to restrain their appetites.
Mm-hmm.
And they gain weight on antidepressants. So there are a lot of factors involved. But anyway, that was interesting. And I talked about it on the weekend show, and I wanted to share that with you.
Mm-hmm. Good article.
Good article. Yep.
Yeah.
All right, so let's get to questions. And oh, yeah, we haven't even mentioned this. We got so many questions. We're getting kind of cocky about it. Questions at drhoffman.net is the destination for questions. And so keep them coming. And we have a full mailbag, and we promise to get to as many questions as we can today. So here we go.
Okay, we've got an email from Anne. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, in a previous discussion, Layla had said that olive leaf extract can be used for bone support. My questions are, what role does it have in bone support? And does it have the same functions as extra virgin olive oil? Can I stay on it forever? If it also functions as an antibiotic, will I build up resistance to it? What a great question. But you know, Dr. Hoffman, I have to confess.
Yeah.
I don't recall ever talking about olive leaf extract for bone support. Now, and I talk about so many things. You may be right, and I just don't remember.
But I think I usually, you know, parenthetically throw that in. And they don't know exactly why it is that olive leaf helps with bone.
Yeah.
We know that olive leaf is a potent antioxidant and anti-inflammatory. And we know that to some extent, osteoporosis is an inflammatory process. For example, patients who have a lot of inflammation, like rheumatoid arthritis, they are much more prone to osteoporosis and bone damage. Mm. So the supplement in question is called Bonolive, B-O-N-O-L-I-V-E. And it's a natural ingredient based on olive polyphenols. And there is research that proves that it addresses postmenopausal concerns such as bone loss, joint discomfort, and certainly has a cardiovascular benefit.
Yes, so, it helps with blood pressure, and it can also help with maintaining blood sugar levels
right.
in the normal range.
Yeah, so you can go to find out about olive polyphenols' impact on bone, go to Bonolive. And I'm not sure that they have cornered the market on the secret sauce within olives that is the bone-specific nutrient or polyphenol.
Is the oleopurine?
I don't know which.
Yeah.
You know, it's patent protected, so there may be some lack of disclosure of precisely what fraction of the all of that is, but, you know, certainly you can derive some of the benefits, maybe in a less concentrated form, by taking lots of extra virgin olive oil, artisanal olive oil that's not damaged by processing. It's kind of interesting. They mentioned they did a study. They found a 32% increase in osteocalcin levels. And osteocalcin is actually a target in some of the medication that's used for osteoporosis.
Bisphosphonates, like Clomax?
Not so much bisphosphonates. There's some injectable medications. So,
Prothia, Reclass?
Forteo.
Forteo.
Forteo. Yeah. So they also say the DEXA scan showed that subjects taking Bon Olive displayed protection of bone mineral density at the lumbar spine and a higher gain of bone mineral density at the femoral neck compared to those taking a placebo. And then there are additional benefits in terms of joints and blood lipid profiles. So, yeah, look, I mean, every company is trying to corner the market on some unique fraction of a botanical.
Yes.
And so this, I believe it's Spanish research, logically enough, because it's a Mediterranean country. But I learned of this a few years back, maybe 3-4 years back. And so that could be an accoutrement to a program for bone preservation or bone restoration.
Yeah. Anna's also asking if it also functions as an antibiotic, because we also like olive leaf extract during cold and flu season. She's asking, will I build up a resistance to it? Dr. Hoffman, you and I have gotten this question in the past before.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
It doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
In other words, would you stop using oregano in your cooking because oregano is also a very potent antibiotic? Yep. You know?
And the way to explain it is that antibiotics have a laser-like effect on one particular aspect of bacterial metabolism. And therefore, it's fairly easy for the bacteria to evolve resistance to the antibiotic. But these botanicals, they have a multiplicity of suppressive effects on bacteria, so that it would be very hard for the bacteria to develop mutations that help it overcome, you know, 15 or 20 different modes of action. So they're not as powerful as antibiotics. They're milder, which is to the good, because if they were very powerful, then they would kill off all your beneficial bacteria.
Yes, then we'd be in big trouble.
Yeah. So they're milder, but it's less likely that you will get antibiotic resistance to them.
Yeah. Okay.
Good question.
Yes, thank you for this very, very thoughtful question.
Can I just interject at this point we have a premium offer? It's free. So take advantage of it. It's the Intelligent Medicine Special Report. You know, during COVID, we were sidelined, and I did a lot of thinking, and I did a lot of interviews, and I did a lot of reading. And the sum total of that is in a special report that I prepared called Immunity Reset: A Personalized Plan to Pandemic-Proof Your Body and Build Resilience for a Long, Healthy Life. And even a year or two ago, I said, you know, it's not enough just to talk about, Operation Warp Speed and to talk about these new drugs that are antivirals, because they won't offer complete protection. No, I just predicted that, like the flu vaccine and like antiviral medications for the flu, they're partially effective, but they're not completely effective. And the main reason that people succumb to COVID is because of the terrain, their underlying physiology that is undermined by poor diet, lack of exercise. I mean, we know that there's so many factors involved. So get that special report. You can subscribe to the Intelligent Medicine newsletter if you haven't yet already at drhoffman.com. And new subscribers, of course, will receive a link to download this vital report. And if you're already an Intelligent Medicine newsletter subscriber, you probably already received an email link for a special edition of the newsletter with the report Immunity Reset. Check it out.
Yes, check it out, everyone. Okay. We've got a question from Danny about organic expel-pressed canola oil. Is this bad? Since I keep running into conflicting information, it's time to call upon the experts.
Huh.
Now, here's the thing. Organic expeller-pressed oils in general are better than the usual way of processing oils. Mm-hmm. However, the fact is, canola oil, while it does have the benefit of a small amount of omega-3 fatty acids, which are beneficial and anti-inflammatory, it does have more of the pro-inflammatory omega-6 fatty acids, which is not desirable. So it doesn't matter, in my opinion, that it's organic expeller pressed.
Right.
It's still the fact that it's canola oil that is problematic.
And contrast it also with olive oil, because olive oil is not just the monounsaturated fat, unless it's highly refined olive oil, where there's basically they've purified it and taken the taste away from it. And the taste is the signature of all the beneficial polyphenols that we're talking about before that, you know, help bone. But canola oil is really just a fat with no additional value. And where it hits me is I am always looking for a mayonnaise because I love mayonnaise. Mm. And so the conventional mayonnaise, like Hellmann's, you know, mayonnaise, which tastes great, but it's made with soy oil, is the same thing. It's a omega-6 oil. You're putting a lot of omega-6 oil in your body. It's highly refined, so there's no additional benefits. And then you go to canola. Canola is supposedly more virtuous because indeed it does have some more monounsaturated fats and maybe a tiny bit of omega-3. But, you know, you're putting a lot of that in your body, you know, because the mayonnaise is kind of a Trojan horse for putting a lot of omega-6 in your body. So, the one that I like is actually made with coconut oil. Now you may say, well, I don't want a coconut flavored mayonnaise.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, there's coconut oil that's deodorized. Okay.
Yes.
It can be deodorized. Now that is processed.
It is.
It's a preferable fat to, canola oil, certainly soy oil. And then there's of course safflower mayonnaise and there's avocado oil mayonnaise.
Yeah.
I don't like the taste of that much of the avocado mayonnaise. I couldn't really get
that. What about the flax oil? Do you like the flax oil mayonnaise?
Flax oil?
Yeah.
No.
This flax oil mayonnaise.
Oh, seriously?
But, you know, safflower oil is also very high in omega-6. So that wouldn't be desirable either. But you're not liking the avocado oil mayonnaise. That's interesting, Dr. Hoffman.
Yeah.
You like mayonnaise the way my husband, Paul, does.
Yeah.
And he doesn't like the avocado oil mayonnaise either. So there's always two jars of mayonnaise in the fridge.
Right. Exactly. There has to be, because if there's only like a half, it's an emergency. But, grilled potatoes or even meats, I like the mayonnaise. You know, I like to, and the French. They eat the French fries with mayo, and the Belgians especially.
Yes.
That ketchup is like an anathema to them, you know.
Exactly. They use mayonnaise and other things. And just like the Brits, they use malt vinegar, right? It's that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Eggs, mayonnaise is a popular appetizer or something. And that's interesting about the mayonnaise. Dr. Huffman, had you considered making your own mayonnaise?
Yeah, that's a bridge too far. But I, you know, I guess that's the best way to do it, right?
Yeah, but
what oil do you use?
Yeah, you would use a good. Do you like olive oil based mayonnaises?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it olive oil is too strong a taste in my opinion for mayonnaise.
Gotcha.
It overwhelms the mayonnaise.
Gotcha. Yeah. All right. Okay. No, that answers that. And when you do make a homemade mayonnaise, we all have to realize that it doesn't last forever in the fridge, like your jar with an expiration date, right? You know, we're talking about 2 to 3 days of use and that's it. You're done.
Yeah.
And to really source your organic eggs very well.
Mm-hmm. Separate the eggs too. That's like a little tricky, right? Because you're using the egg white and you whip it and that whole thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
I've done it, but I'm not sure if there's enough payoff.
Yeah.
For the effort involved.
Do you like hollandaise sauce as well? I love hollandaise sauce. Hollandaise is absolutely wonderful on grilled asparagus.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, gee, you put hollandaise on practically anything. It's like dipping things into a nice runny egg yolk.
Right. Then in France, there's this sauce béarnaise, which is like this creamy sauce that's like a meat sauce. It's very good. Yeah. Okay.
Good stuff, French cooking.
Yeah. I just enjoyed some last month. Okay. Yeah. Let's see if we have enough time. Yeah, let's do another question for this segment, and then we'll go to our next segment.
Yeah. This is from Amanda. Dear Dr. Hoffman, I've been an avid listener for the past 2 years, and I've learned so many interesting facts about healthy nutrition from you and Layla. I have a question on behalf of my husband. Yeah, thank you, Amanda. I have a question on behalf of my husband. He's a 47-year-old male who's developed liver spots and skin discoloration on the inside of his right forearm and biceps. Hmm. Should we be concerned about his liver function?
Hmm. Well, you know, there's the term liver spots actually more refers to the color and appearance of the spots than the fact that they relate to liver.
Yeah.
So what they are deposits of lipofuscin, and these are products of, you know, they may reflect some degree of oxidative damage, free radicals that cannot be completely overcome or cleaned up by the body's antioxidant systems. But they also are a ubiquitous feature of aging in lighter skinned individuals.
I think
one of the virtues of, you know, being very dark skinned is you're less likely to have those types of skin discolorations. You have other skin discolorations, but less likely to have that, the Caucasians and lighter skinned Asian individuals have.
Amanda is also asking, this may or may not be relevant, but he does suffer from gout, which he controls with allopurinol and quercetin. Mm-hmm. Is that impacting on his skin?
Yeah, well, gout is usually, I mean, if let's talk about Dr. Perlmutter's book, Drop Acid, which I would recommend to her and any gout sufferer. And it usually occurs in the setting of carbohydrate intolerance. That's the new thing on gout, as opposed to too much in the way of meat.
Sure means.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying the meat doesn't play a role in it, but many people have gout as a result of excess fructose, which is pro-inflammatory and can damage the liver. I mean, you know, I'm not saying that this is indicative of liver problems, but when people have gout, they often have fatty liver at the same time.
Yes. Interesting. Amanda, so there you go. All right.
And, you know, it's interesting. Uric acid may be a mechanism by which the body combats free radicals. So it may be an effort for the body to, because uric acid's an antioxidant, and it may be an adaptation to excess carbohydrates or excess food that drive free radical formation and inflammation, that the body overgenerates uric acid.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, that is beautifully laid out in Dr. Perlmutter's book that I recommend, Drop Acid.
Okay. Thank you, Amanda.
Okay.
Best of luck to your husband.
So a good point at which to flip over to side two, part two of today's Intelligent Medicine podcast. And what can we anticipate? Give us a tease to what we're going to address in part two, Layla.
I'm taking warfarin, otherwise known as Coumadin, for my atrial fibrillation. I'd like to start using kyolic-aged garlic. Would that be too much?
Okay, good question. Questions at drhoffman.net, the destination for questions. And as you can see, we're active even during a holiday week. So enjoy part two when we resume. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Layla Mutin. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, and we'll be right back.